Compartment of economic trade was elected, that by the control of the quantum mechanism removes the atoms from having the deep capacity to conserve heat by changes in temperature. So, it's a pleasure to introduce you.
And now, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, I'm not sure I know how to use this, but my name is Thomas Provencal. I'm an American living in Hong Kong and Berlin, back and forth. The title of my talk is The Causal Link Between Nanotechnology, Toxicology, and Human Health, and specifically DNA damage by UV emission from nanoparticles. Now, we all know nanoparticles will reduce the tumors, but they're also doing something else. Well, I'm not sure how this is not coming up.
Mm-hmm. Technology completely out. Okay, you can use the scroll. Go on, you scroll here, and then this is to once again to come back. And okay, you can use the pointer.
Yeah, but I
here.
No, no, you have to push this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There. You go.
Okay, but then okay.
And then work. The clicker is
and
here.
It works.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Huh. Okay.
Well,
I don't know if it was. If you want, you can proceed with the scroll.
No, I have to go step by step.
You need to have a USB drive.
Ah, okay. So this is yours. Now it works?
Yeah.
Okay.
Technology is not.
Okay, I think I apologize for all the confusion. In Germany and Hong Kong, we don't have sophisticated equipment like they have in Italy. So, okay, getting onto the subject, and again, my apologies. We know solar UV radiation damages the DNA to cause skin cancer. And since solar UV does not penetrate the skin, we think cancer of internal organs by UV cannot occur. However, if UV is somehow created inside the human body, the DNA damage would cause cancer of internal organs. And the question is there a causal link to UV within the body? Is this possible? Proposal? NPs provide the source of UV radiation inside the body. NPs here will be nanoparticles. And they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. They enter the body in the air we breathe and the food we eat. And the pathway of DNA damage by nanoparticles is known to mimic that by conventional UV sources. Therefore, the causal link that I'm going to propose today, and this is a proposal, between nanoparticles and cancer is proposed to be the DNA damage by UV radiation from nanoparticles. So when the nanoparticles are reducing the size of the tumor, they're doing something else, which may be just as bad. Nanotechnology. Do they consider nanoparticles a health problem? And of course they do. And experiments over the past decade have shown nanoparticles damage the DNA. Very simply, you sprinkle nanoparticles in the biological fluid, you're going to find DNA damage. Protection of consumer health by labeling of the products would help. It would allow the the consumer to make a decision. And you can see here, this is nanotechnology picture. The different types of human health problems caused linked to nanoparticles. Not necessarily proven, linked. And you can see they're very, there's Parkinson's, Crohn's, many kinds of illnesses. So you can see that there's no one particular form which is important. And the diversity of these health problems suggests that somehow, at least to me at least, the DNA has been scrambled and it can create an anemia. DNA damage. It's not new. 2003, that's what, 15 years ago, and before that, they were shown to induce oxidative stress, which you just heard about, and inflammation, but the mechanism was not understood, but it was correlated with large S over V ratio. That is the surface to volume ratio. And in 2008, DNA damage was linked to cancer by ROS. You just heard a talk on that. Reactive oxygen species. In particular, here I focused on the OH radical. But there's a problem. And the problem is, to create the OH radical, somehow the nanoparticles must produce at least 5 EV. It just don't happen out of nowhere. The question is, how do the nanoparticles create radiation beyond 5 EV? It's been naturally just assumed to occur. And that's what I'm saying. Now, chemical DNA damage. Currently, the nanoparticles are thought to damage the DNA by ROS, driven by chemical reactions of the material of the nanoparticle in contact with the DNA. But there's a problem with that reasoning, and it is that DNA is damaged with chemically inert quartz particles. And the DNA damage at a distance occurs across cell membranes. This work was done at Bristol in the UK. And I think on these type of reasoning, I think you almost have to conclude the chemical reaction of nanoparticles with DNA is unlikely. Quantum mechanics. By classical physics, genetically modified food under metabolic processes in the gut is thought to increase the nanoparticle temperature. This is a classical argument. You push heat into a particle, the temperature goes up. GM here is genetically modified. The quantum mechanics, not classical physics, go into the nanoscale. And QM here is quantum mechanics. And by QM, the heat capacity of a nanoparticle vanishes, which means you cannot conserve the heat by an increase in temperature. And instead, you're going to emit UV radiation. And that will be greater than 5 eV. That will create the ROS. So there's no need for the ROS. With all respect to everything done in cancer research, it's not important. What's happening is the UV. That's going to create the US, ROS, and also damage the DNA. Here I show the what I call the quantum mechanics of Planck volume. Most of you know this. It's not new. Here you see the Planck energy. Planck energy here on the ordinate in electron volts, electromagnetic confinement wavelength in microns. This is this white line going across is classical physics. No matter what the size of the confinement is, the atom always has heat capacity. And this is what people are assuming out here where there's nanoparticles. However, the Frank Law. This is the Planck Law. You all know this. If you plot this out at 300 degrees Kelvin, you get this yellow curve, and you can see it drops very rapidly below 100 microns. 100 microns is very big. Nanoscale. And under electromagnetic confinement at lambda less than 100 nanometers, which is way over here, quantum mechanics requires all the atoms and the nanoparticles to have vanishing heat capacity. There's no temperature change. And then you have to ask the question, how do the nanoparticles provide this high electromagnetic confinement? You can't just wave your hand on it. You have to go from out here over to here. That's quite a distance to travel. And I didn't do this right. So, and the reason I'm going to present to you is here is the high surface to volume ratios. That will confine the atoms over nanoparticle dimension. And this will come out a little further. What I call here is simple QED, and in this QED, heat is converted into electromagnetic radiation because, again, as I just showed you, quantum mechanics precludes conservation by temperature, and QED is a simple form of the complex light and matter action by Feynman. You don't need that. And basically what it's saying is heat, if you add it to a nanoparticle, and somehow, by magic, there is no heat capacity, you're going to produce helium radiation. But I'll show you how this can occur realistically. Here I show a nanoparticle, diameter D, heat coming in, it all goes to the surface. Why? High surface to volume ratio. To the surface now. No temperature change by quantum mechanics. It's sitting there. It has to be conserved. And what I'm proposing is that you're going to create standing waves like Planck did back 100 years ago, standing in this nanoparticle. And lambda over 2 has to be equal to D. And once you use up that radiation in the surface to create the standing waves, there's no more confinement, right? And therefore, the radiation comes off. Okay. And the equations are simple. F is the frequency of the radiation. C is the velocity of the light. N is the refractive index of the nanoparticle, and it's in a solid state, so it will reduce the speed of light in there by 1 over n. And lambda over 2 is d. The Planck energy is hf, and in here is the number of photons created. If you put a lot of heat in here, you're going to create a lot of photons coming out. So the number of photons will be the energy coming in, q, divided by the energy E, Q over E. And time permitting, I'll be talking about what happens with a photon in space, and that in turn is related to dark matter. You'll see this all coming back again. Now here's the EM emission. This is the wavelength of the radiation coming off. This is in nanometers. The diameter of the nanoparticle is here in nanometers. And you can see asbestos or talc, and this will come up later as well. I show there. And the equation is lambda equal 2 in D. And what we're interested in on damaging the DNA is UVC at 254 nanometers. And you can see on this plot, 254, it's around 80 nanometers. So all talc nanoparticles less than 80 nanometers will create damage to the DNA. However, there are alternatives to produce UV in nanoparticles, and the answer is yes. And they're called multi-R processes, and these are called UCNPs, up conversion nanoparticles. And what they base their argument on is you can take a couple small energy IR photons, they add up somehow to get to higher energy. Well, there's a lot of criticism of that. This paper shows a detailed analysis of this process. You can come up on this later. I'll have this on the web. Coming back to reference it. But it's highly speculative, and what I'm proposing is simple QED does not rely on these speculative processes. What happens is the energy E, you see here, HC over 2 and D. Now the diameter of the nanoparticle is nanoscale, right? So right away you're in the EUV range. You're creating energy inside the nanoparticle in the extreme ultraviolet. Now the lower quantum states in the nanoparticle, for example, the plasmon resonances you see here, are excited by fluorescence, by EUV fluorescence. It's a very clear physical process. There's no speculation. Now, I'll discuss, again, time permitting. I'm going to talk about, briefly, the Johnson & Johnson lawsuit, nanoparticles and genetically modified food, and politics. And unfortunately, you can't separate politics from science because, at least in the U.S., you have the FDA and Monsanto, the March Against Monsanto, and Nobel Laureates versus Greenpeace. And then I came to Milan. My wife and I went to the Milan Science Museum because they explicitly said they would be treating nanotechnology, but there's none there. And I'll be presenting something on that, and in particular, this disinfectant flashlight and Milan Science Museum, and there I'll be talking about, briefly, about dark matter. You all heard about dark matter. You can relate the same physics to dark matter as well as to genetically modified food. Now the J&J lawsuit, some of you probably know this, but J&J paid more than $110 million to a woman who says she developed ovarian cancer using talcum powder. And in 2015, J&J lost three cases on talc, but it won a case in March of this year, back and forth. And the ACS, American Cancer Society, position on talcum powder and cancer depends on whether the talc is asbestos-free. And natural talc does contain asbestos, but does not, and does cause cancer, but asbestos-free talc, they think is okay. But I think you'll see after this talk, even if it is not okay. And the scientific evidence about asbestos-free talc is not very clear, despite what the ACM says. On the toxicity of talc, genotoxicity tests do not control the particle size. You need nanoparticles less than 100 nanometers to produce the UV. They're running tests on 5, 10, 20 micron particles, where they're so far out in the infrared they do no damage. I make a point here, if you have a particle 1 micron, you're going to produce radiation at 3.2 micron, and this does not damage the DNA. So there's no need to measure nanoparticles. There is a need to measure nanoparticles in talc less than 80 nanometers. And until you do that, you don't see the problem. How about in GM food? As you all know, GM food offers the advantage of enhanced growth to the world's population. The GMCs are controversial, as you all know. Pros and cons. Huber here is the prominent critic of GM foods, and he claims the pathogen is produced that harms human health. For example, residents in soybean fields in Argentina develop cancer from birth defects. Now, on the other side of the fence, general GM food corporations, Monsanto and the like, argue that science is still looking for but not found Huber's pathogen. And this would establish a causal link between food and health problems. Again, you can come up on the web later, I don't have time to go into it, but this is a very good summary. And the background is that the farmland, there's 60 million acres of farmland which contains wheat. They can't get rid of the wheat, so what is usually done, they use Monsanto's Roundup. It contains the herbicide glyphosate, maybe you've heard of that, and it's widely spread on the fields. The glyphosate does not come through the leaves, so they have to add an adjuvant. An adjuvant is something like a nanoparticle, and specifically it's the POEA. And POEA is polyethylamine. And weeds alone cannot be sprayed, I think you can understand that, because they're contiguous with the crop, and therefore the nanoparticles finally resolve in the plant crop. Here's a cartoon of that. Here I show a POE globule, heat coming in, as I pointed out. It will produce radiation at no temperature change, and that radiation can pass through the cell membrane and damage the DNA. And the point is here, the POE is really the genotoxic, not the glyphosate. And this is consistent with what Monsanto said, but what they didn't mention is the POEA that they put in there is damaging the human health. FDA and U.S. politics, you all know everything in the U.S. is politicized today. And in 2010, Obama appointed Taylor, he was a former Monsanto vice president, as FDA commissioner for food. And before leaving office, Obama signed Monsanto's protection law. And the law states that even the future research shows GM food causes significant problems, cancer, etc. The federal courts have no power to stop their spread, use, or sale. Okay? And it's not surprising that in 2017, Obama got $400,000 from Wall Street, and he argued in his speech that big money, special interest groups are okay. It's not just Obama. Bush did it, the U.S. Congress and Senate are doing that today. So we have very little protection. March against Monsanto. Some of you may know this. Anyhow, they claim that research has shown that Monsanto's GM foods can lead to serious health conditions, such as the development of cancer tumors, infertility, and birth defects. Monsanto counterclaimed by saying there's no scientific proof of its main ingredient, glyphosate, being the cause of cancer. And I think you see from what I've already presented, I'm consistent with that. It's not the glyphosate, it's the POEA, but Monsanto never mentioned that. Lariats and Greenpeace, there was a petition going around. They had 100 Nobel laureates signing a letter asking Greenpeace, you all know Greenpeace, to halt its campaign against genetically modified crops, abandon your campaign. The laureates argued that GMOs can offer food services to the world's poorest, concluding that Greenpeace action is a crime against humanity. This has been going on. In the argument, scientific, linking the GM food to human health requires a causal relation. Maybe it isn't what I've just proposed to you, but someone, you have to have a causal relationship. The legal argument is, even if the Oris didn't know that UV is produced in POEA, they knew or should have known. Experiments over the past couple of decades have shown nanoparticles damage the DNA of all living cells. And so the what the conclusion is here is the Nobel laureates, I think, should retract their signatures pending experimental data that shows GM food is not genotoxic. The Milan Science Museum, if you go there, you look up dark matter, and I don't know if you can read this, but Vera Rubin, she was an American astronomer in the 1970s. She looked at a galaxy spinning, and like you see here, and concluded that the light is absorbed by cosmic dust. She didn't make this point. The point is being made now. Light is absorbed by cosmic dust and redshift, giving the impression that the velocities out here, the outer periphery, are higher. The velocities out here are much higher than predicted by Newtonian mechanics, and therefore she concluded there's dark matter necessary to hold the galaxies together. And that has been the mainstream argument now in astronomy. But I think you think about what I showed you earlier on the nanoparticle and the heat coming in. If you have the photon from outer space passing through the dust, they're going to produce a redshift. So what they've been using for many years is it's overstating the velocity of the galaxy. On this disinflection, in my abstract I showed a sample of simple QED converting heat to UV using silver nanoparticles. Remember this? And similarly, the disinfection flashlight offs convenient in disinfection of hospital rooms. A white light flashlight LED around $10, UV now $365, and a 254 nanometer is about $1,000, and they don't last very long. And what I'm proposing here is you simply nanocoat the front lens of a white light LED flashlight, and when you come into that situation, you realize here's a plot of reflectance versus wavelength. White light 0.3 to 0.7. Aluminum here reflects almost all of that. You can't use that. And silver is good at the low end but not at the higher end. So, and I've gold coated a lens, and that's what I'm working on at present. And the conclusion, nanoparticles are now common in all foods, genetically modified or otherwise. And whether they're genotoxic requires an extensive and meaningful test program of Monsanto's Roundup targeting nanoparticles of POEA, but U.S. politics suggest this is not likely, as Riley pointed out. But nevertheless, you look at what's happening, the nanoparticles are emitting EM radiation beyond the UV, and they will damage the human DNA that, depending on the individual's immune system, may lead to diverse health problems. If your immune system is good, you have no problem. Not all of us are that lucky. And basically, the point I'm making here is that Trump should repeal Obama's Protection Act, leaving Monsanto to defend itself in litigation like Johnson & Johnson is doing. They should leave it at least to the courts, which right now they cannot. And in the U.S., politics control science. Perhaps this is not true in the European Union. Well, that's all I have. If you have any questions or papers, you can get back to me. I'll have this presentation up on the web, and you can go to noqed.org to get it back. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You think that the toxicity caused by nanoparticles because of the UV radiation was
really
interesting for
you?
Because
you have to.
Oh.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So this toxic effect of nanoparticles UV radiation was very interesting for me. I'm also working with energy mechanism of nanoparticles. So my question is, how high levels of heat is required to create UV radiation?
Very little. If there's not much heat, the number of UV photons is very small, but you don't need many to damage the DNA.
So, for instance, a hot day, like a sunny day, would be enough to create UV radiation? Do you think sun, for instance, that we are outside the UV light from the sun that we get, if we don't get any, would be also enough to create UV radiation?
The nanoparticles create the UV. The UV cannot, from the sun, cannot get inside our bodies, right?
Yeah.
And I'm making the point there's another source of UV.
Okay.
It's the nanoparticles.
Is that because they are heated?
Yeah, the human body will heat the nanoparticles, especially in the stomach and the gut. That digestive process creates heat. And what is assumed is the temperature goes up. They made the same assumption in astronomy on the dust. They argued the temperature goes up. It creates light. And in the body, it creates UV.
And the temperature
of the dust, yeah.
Temperature is
enough. Oh, that's enough. That's enough. Again, it's not Niagara Falls. Right? It's not a big UV source, but it's big enough.
Yeah,
well, you're from Italy, you have darker skin, right?
Yes.
So you're lucky, because your immune system is good.
Okay. Huh? Yeah, that's true. I
can answer. Yeah.
So, is size matter or not? So, so you constantly talked about the nanoparticles.
Yeah,
size 100, but does 20 nanometers or 10 versus 80?
Would, like I showed you, the spectra for talc.
Right.
Anything from 0 to 80 nanometers will damage the DNA.
But
the shorter wavelength will be more close to extreme UV.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it may be absorbed right away.
Mm-hmm.
May not reach the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
But UV, 254, will pass through the body.
And chemistry, the same, does not matter at all.
What?
Chemistry of
I don't think so. Right. That was
true.
They needed some mechanism to argue that cancer is caused by nanoparticles, and that's what they came up with.
Okay.
But the ROS needs energy. You can't just create them by waving your hand.
So
what happens, I think, is the UV comes out and creates the ROS.
Yeah.
You don't need the armor.
Yeah, experience where you took the same material and then just synthesize a different size of particles going to like a micron or even few microns, and we're able to see that a few micron size, it does not as toxic.
No, the physics that I described, the energy going into the surface, depending on it, applies to nano particles and macro particles.
Mm-hmm.
But the energy, the level, mm-hmm. is very low in the large particles. And if they took the nanoparticles out of the previous presentation, maybe they wouldn't see the effect. See, something is causing mm-hmm. the effect of the nanoparticles. It just doesn't happen. It's happening for a good reason. Unfortunately, that reason can also damage your health. You may be worse off.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, most people don't want to hear that.
Okay, so just follow up on this. It's much known, actually, about the surfaces of these nanoparticles, because they contain a lot of undercoordinated sites, and from that point of view, they would be, sort of one would assume that they have some chemical activity which would increase as the surface-to-volume ratio increases, meaning that the
particles
some small...
Well, so
I follow your argument, but I'm just, asking...
Yeah, well, when you get the molecules, it's not that clear. If you have, you don't have a nice continuous surface.
Right.
A nanoparticle is like 2 or 3 nanometers.
Right.
A silicate, it has a surface, right?
So it's a curvature effect.
Yeah, but
matter, I mean,
the surface, the volume is important.
Right.
And
because it seems to me that there should be a multitude of effects. You know, sure, UV could be one of them.
Well, I'm looking now at, if you look at the atom
uh-huh.
by itself, forget the molecule, an atom by itself has the same problem. When you put heat into an atom, just ordinary body heat, that energy goes in there, but the atom temperature cannot increase. So how do you and what I've come up with, it's on the web now, is that the electrons are usually thought to increase in temperature, right? But with this physics, they don't increase in temperature. They're going to produce radiation. And at that size, you can produce X-rays. So even if you take a molecule like this and say, well, there's no surface, look at one atom. And then you conclude that at this point, this atom is emitting X-rays.
Right, it's like a moving charge, right?
And the key is quantum mechanics, and the argument I made there on the plot, that's...
Right. So that idea of nanoparticles having a vanishing heat capacity, why is that the case? I mean, is that related? So there is this idea, obviously Einstein's idea of heat capacity of monatomic gases that led to the development of quantum mechanics. But is that the same idea? I mean, do you have some other...
Einstein got involved in this by my knowledge of history.
And why later, obviously, but...
But it was Hubble who measured the velocity expansion of the universe. And he based that on redshift. The light coming from us is being redshift. It's moving, the source is moving away from us, so the wavelength is increasing. And Einstein could have stopped that, but he wanted to argue his theory.
Right.
It was his theory. Yeah, he's not going to work again. And what you see today is they're looking for dark matter, and it doesn't exist.
That's right.
If you correct the redshift in Vera Rubin's work for cosmic dust, then there is no dark matter. But that's, and again, that falls back on quantum mechanics. The thought I presented
during the break. I'm sorry. We have to respect the program.
I can show you this way.
We can talk later. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So sorry about that. We are a little bit in late. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Wenger. Your certificate.
Thank you
very much. So, back to the first break. So now we are supposed to have the photo here in this room, and then a very brief break with refreshment in ground floor, not more than 15 minutes, because I'm sorry that the injury. We have to try to recover some time. So, if you wanted to come in this site, we can have our photographer here, the group of the conference.
Thank you.